So I guess for the record, could you please state your name?
Yes, I'm Kareem Khan.
And could you tell me what year you were born in?
I was born in 1994.
And I'd be really interested to know about your family. How did your family end up in Oxford?
My grandfather, my dad's dad, migrated to Oxford shortly after his brother came here. So I think his brother came here first. He was part of the Pakistani military and he started working here, and then he brought his brother over, my grandfather. I think my grandfather came in like the early 60s. And at first he spent some time in different cities around the UK with different friends that he had. But then I think he realised that Oxford was the place that he liked the most, where he wanted to settle. And so he essentially built his life there. And then my grandmother came shortly after. Mm-hmm. I think that's how we all ended up here.
And how much do you know of your family's history from that period? Did, you know, for example, your grandparents ever share their experiences of finding a house to live in or the type of community they're part of?
I feel like I know like little snippets of, I think the impression I got was there was definitely like a big sense of community amongst other migrants, other like Pakistani South Asian migrants who had come over and were in similar positions. And they essentially just became like a family, or like it's weird how we're still sort of connected to them to this day, and we're still connected to them almost as like extended family members, even though it's like 2-3 generations ago. I got the sense that there was like a big sense of community around that. I think the impression I have is that they were like renting in different houses, and then eventually they had their own house, and they started, they had some lodgers who were living there as well, and lodgers from different places, like from Jamaica,
It's really interesting. I mean, what area of Oxford did they call home?
So they called home, I think there were a few different, when they first came, they called East Oxford home, so like around, it's like Charles Street, Percy Street, that sort of area. And they lived there for a bit. And then they moved back to Pakistan. My dad was born in the UK, but I think when he was like, I think 3 or 4, they decided to go to Karachi in Pakistan, and they lived 8 years there. And I think their intention was to live their life there, and to not necessarily come back to the UK. But then eventually they realised that their life would be better in the UK for them and for the outcome of their children. At that point, they had 3 more kids in Pakistan. So at that point, I think 6 children they had. And then at that point, Cowley became their home. So they had they moved to Cowley. And that house, like my grandma still lives in since then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what did your grandparents do? Because we've heard from other people that, you know, their grandmothers or their mothers were seamstresses, for example, and, you know, a lot of men worked in the car factories. Is that similar to your grandparents' experience?
Yeah, quite similar. So my dad, my grandfather worked in the car factory as well. So I think that's what he was doing. My grandmother, I don't think, worked. I think she was like volunteering, she was working at the school for a little bit, like almost like the primary school, where she was like helping, you know, children on break times, sort of thing. But yeah, my grandfather worked at the factories, and I think he worked a couple of other jobs as well, but I can't quite remember what they were. But he did, but it's interesting, in Pakistan he had a shoe shop there, and also like a sweet shop as well. So he had those businesses when he was at that point.
It's really interesting, like, that, you know, his occupation as a business owner in Pakistan to then come here and to work on the factory floor, and you know, in reading books about the history of Oxford and talking to people, it seemed like people had a really difficult time working in that environment. Did your granddad ever talk about his experiences working on the factory floor?
Yeah, because my grandfather died like quite a long time ago, before I was born, actually. So I've never really met him or got to talk to him about all of that. I don't know, I think the impression, it's difficult to gauge like how difficult he found it. I think the impression I got is it seemed like he had worked really hard, and it's almost like, it felt like he had worked really hard in it, but like quite young, it was almost like he was almost like quite exhausted, and that's the impression I got just from hearing things.
And I guess maybe moving on to your dad's experiences, you know, you said he was born here and then he went back to Karachi and came back. Have you ever had conversations about his childhood experiences of growing up in Oxford?
Yeah, I've had some conversations with him. So I think it's interesting because I feel like his childhood was kind of split into two, like, you know, some of his early years spent here, but I don't think he has that many memories of that time because he was like 3 or 4, I think. And then Karachi, he spent like 8 years, and like it felt like his childhood was spent there. So I feel like I've heard, I get a glimpse into that, like how, from my understanding, it felt like it's almost like the education system was quite interesting. Like in Pakistan, it seems like the rote learning system was something he struggled with, and compared to like some of his siblings, who I think they, you know, their memories were better or something. But I think when he came here, he, I think he valued like the education system a bit more, like in terms of how, like, it felt like, it seemed like he had lost a lot of confidence in Pakistan in terms of how, in terms of, yeah, who he was and that sort of thing. But when he was growing up here, he, as a teenager, he really got interested in woodwork, and that became like his passion and something that he felt like was his thing. And so he did a lot of, he became a joiner and worked part-time with this company called Brian Gelder Joinery. So they're like a woodwork company, and he was working there even as a teenager and for a few years. I think with education like that, I don't know, he wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do long-term. And I think the idea of having that professional career kind of came slightly later. Like he told me about, like, there was a moment where he went to the Oxford Brookes Open Day, and he was just like looking at what courses were available, and there was a time where there was like a course available for like architecture, and there were some places available, and he just made that sudden kind of spontaneous decision to like enroll in it, and it started a few weeks later after that point. So, and then that was the career that he had, like, after, for, I think, like, yeah, I don't know how many years, like 30 years or something, but that became his thing. And, but interestingly, he did say that his dad wanted him to be an architect, but he wasn't sure that was in him, like, or that's who he could become. But,
Interesting. I mean, when did he make that decision? Like, do you know when him going to the Oxford Brookes Open Day, do you know when that happened?
I think it was maybe like when he was I think he did start later, so maybe like 20, 21, right. I think something like that. Because at the time he was a mature student. I think at that point I was born at that point, and he was married, and I was born, and so he started like later.
Yeah.
And even like doing it at his A levels, that was something he did at the local college, the Oxford City College, and was catching up on that, and
It's really interesting, I guess, like maybe trying to map his experiences against, you know, legislation that made, you know, access to education or higher education possible. Because, you know, in speaking to, you know, older-ish generation of people, welfare state was stronger, you know, more funds being channeled towards supporting higher education. So I wonder if your dad was maybe a beneficiary of that.
I definitely got that impression, actually, like when he was talking about it, like in terms of like the maintenance loans and everything, and how there seemed like there were more opportunities in terms of to financially support him, and to do it, because he wouldn't have been able to afford a degree at that point at all. Because he was, he was like the second eldest, so it was my auntie and him. So it felt like they, and my grandfather had passed away like a few years before that. So it felt like they had a lot of responsibility to like try and provide for the family and try and do things, especially like seven siblings. It felt like there's a lot of onus on them in terms of what they're doing and their responsibilities and stuff like that.
And do you know much about your dad or even your grandparents' experiences of being Muslim in the city? Like, where would there be, you know, where did they find community? I know you mentioned earlier in the interview that, you know, it's almost a family-like dynamic and it still continues to this day. But do you have an impression of how those connections were formed?
I think it's interesting, like, I definitely get the sense that there is such a strong sense of community, like everyone seems to know each other, and that even at the mosque, like my dad would recognise quite a lot of people and know people from different places, like, and I think that maybe that's a combination of like the people that he went to school with. So he went for high school, he went to Oxford Boys School, that's what it was called at the time, and that had like a big Muslim Pakistani community that went there. So I think a lot of Muslim Pakistani young men went to that school. But I think with my grandparents, I think it's interesting, because with my grandmother, like she seems to, even now she seems to have like quite a lot of strong connections with people and within the community, and I'm not quite sure where that has derived from, but I do feel like there was a lot of onus on, like, you know, when someone's passed away or like when someone's ill, you go and visit them. And that's something that like my grandma still does, like you hear things, like you hear someone's unwell and then you go and visit them and do those things. So it's like there was like a lot of emphasis on like visiting each other, I think, and maybe like with my grandparents, like coming back to the country and their decision making around whether they should stay in Pakistan. I think the impression I got when I was talking to my grandma about it was that the friends that they had within Oxford were very helpful to them in making them understand like where they should go, what they should do, and so there was like a support system there, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's interesting to try and understand, you know, there's a lot of, you know, whether you're Muslim or you're South Asian, you're not necessarily linked to the people, you know, you're tenuously linked to other migrants in the city.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to try and understand how those community networks were formed. And it is like it's really interesting to hear grandma's experiences of like this mutual support underlying a lot of their friendships and relationships. maybe focusing on your mum's experiences. Mm. So, was she born in Oxford as well? What was her experience of coming to the city?
She was born in Pakistan, and she came when she married my dad. So that was in the 90s, I think like 90, maybe 91, I think. So 3 years before I was born. And so that was like her first time coming to Oxford, and after having married my dad. And I think her experience of Oxford, it seems like, she was living, so my mum and my dad were living with my grandma for a bit. I think for the first 3 years, and then like after I was born, they kind of moved around in a few different places. They kind of moved around some of those different places, like in East Oxford. And then eventually we went to, went to Littlemore and lived in a council flat there. And then over time kind of moved around a few different places.
And what does she do for work?
She doesn't work, and she didn't work. I think like I felt like she was more like within the house and like raising children, and that was kind of her what she was doing. And I'm trying to think like what her experience of Oxford. I got the sense that she was very that in terms of like just the coldness of like how cold it is, like coming to this country, and like I remember her talking about that, and like how she would find it quite cold, and how to sort of adjust to that, probably like the homesickness, like being away from family, how to communicate with them, and
And how old was she when she came here?
So I think she came when she was like maybe 22.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a big adjustment at 22.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming to a new country.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't really imagine it.
I couldn't either.
Yeah, it's pretty mad.
Yeah. And in terms of maintaining her connection to her family in Pakistan, I mean, like, your dad has a very different experience, but his immediate family is here. Do you have any memories of how she would do that? Like, was she sending letters or cassettes?
Yeah.
And how much, I guess, like, what was your experience of growing up having that connection to Pakistan with her family?
Yeah. It's interesting that, she would send letters to, like, those airmail letters.
Yeah.
To her family, and then also the cassettes as well. I remember her like recording on the cassettes, because I think my dad got like a big sort of cassette player where you can like record and also like play, and she would send those cassettes back home to Pakistan. And then I think they would sometimes have phone calls, but I think at that point my grandparents in Pakistan didn't have like a phone in their house, so it was really difficult to communicate directly. I remember there would be moments where they would go to like another house that had a phone, and then they would be able to communicate and like talk over the phone. And so I feel like, and also like the price of like, you know, those £5 cards which only give you like 5 minutes or something, she would like use those, and it would just be so expensive to communicate. But it feels like so much has changed since then, but I definitely got that impression. And then we did visit Pakistan a few times. I was too young, but like I think I was like maybe two or three at the time. We went to my uncle's wedding in Pakistan, so my dad's brother, we went there, and my mum was pregnant with my brother at the time. And then the time after that we went was my other uncle's wedding from Pakistan, so my mum's brother. And that was in 99 when we went for that. So I've got some memories, like some random sort of memories of that. And then shortly after that, my grandfather, so my mum's mum, passed away. And maybe like after maybe a couple of months after that, so we went again in the winter, like in December. And then after that, it was like, it felt like there was quite a big gap. It felt like there was like a 7-year gap. Then we went again, and then, yeah, it feels like there's been a few massive gaps after every time we've gone. And I feel like even my mum's relationship with, it's interesting, like, seeing it from her perspective, like, her relationship with her family feels like it changed, just the how time impacts your relationship with your family.
Maybe now moving on to you, now that we've laid the groundwork of, you know, your family's experiences here in Oxford, and, you know, maybe we can touch on it as we're talking about your experiences. Can you maybe describe what it was like for you growing up in Oxford? I know you mentioned that, you know, by the time you were born, you're maybe, what, like, second-ish generation?
Yeah.
How big of a community was there, of not just South Asians but Muslims in Oxford when you were growing up?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think because we were living in Littlemore at the time, like, and like still now, but I think it felt like the demographic in Littlemore feels so different to like other demographics, like Cowley and Cowley, Iffley and all of that area. It feels like maybe there's more like of South Asian Muslim presence. But for me, it felt like there was like a very white working class community that I felt like I was in. So when I went to school, I felt like I was only one of a few South Asian or even children, like people of colour. Like there weren't many. It was very white predominant. And I definitely felt, at the time I felt like a bit of an outsider. I think that I felt like I wasn't really part of this community and I was a bit disconnected. And interestingly, because of my trips to Pakistan, like quite a few trips during that time, like 1999, when I was like 5 or 6 and when I'd only just started school, that I, at the time I was speaking Urdu and Punjabi more than I was English. So my Urdu and Punjabi was really good, and that's how I was communicating with my parents. And so I struggled because in school I didn't really know how to like communicate properly with everyone else. And I didn't know how to kind of speak English properly. And at the time my teacher kind of said to my parents that you need to speak English with him, because he's going to struggle, he's going to be isolated, he's not going to be able to make friends. And I think at the time I decided that I wasn't going to speak Urdu anymore with them, and I was only going to start speaking English. And I feel like that still had like a bit of an impact on the way on my relationship to Urdu and Punjabi now, that I can't speak it as well anymore because of that. And yeah, I just find it really interesting, like, something about the education system in that time was very, I think, so different to how it might be now in terms of like bilingualism and like this idea of speaking multiple languages and what responsibilities a school think they have in that respect. And I don't know how, like, being able to speak a different language, how that's perceived by the education system and like by schools, because at the time it felt more of like, it felt like a black mark, or it felt like something that othered you more than something that should be celebrated or something you should embrace.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're just navigating so much as a young person.
Yeah.
You're just trying to fit in. It's interesting that your teachers would discourage that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, you're right. What does that say about the education system?
Mm.
it's so different now.
Yeah, definitely.
People embrace the idea that you can speak lots of different languages.
Yeah.
So in terms of school itself, I mean, did you enjoy school? Was it something that you had an aptitude for? Or?
Yeah, I think with school, I think I did struggle to focus a little bit. Like, I don't think I was that great at school. Like, when I first started, in terms of like primary school, like, I think my reading wasn't great. I was kind of below my reading age, and I think I did struggle to. I didn't feel like in school I was validated for being. I wasn't perceived as being good at it by the teachers or the school, but I think there was still like a desire in me to work hard and to get better at it. But I didn't feel like I was part of like the clever group necessarily. And I also feel like I was quite, I realized even at that time, I was quite imaginative and more, I was like almost like daydreaming more and like just thinking like, I didn't enjoy like the maths and that sort of element of it, like the sciences and the maths, but I enjoyed just like just getting bored and daydreaming and thinking about random ideas and things. But I didn't feel like that within school that strand was necessarily celebrated or like encouraged.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that. And then, yeah, even at secondary school, I felt the same thing. Like, quite early on, I felt like I kept getting put into like the really low groups, like when you're in different sets for like maths, English, I kept being put in like the bottom sets. And then that started to like really grate at me in terms of, I didn't quite understand why I kept being placed in those groups and why my like predicted grades were so low.
Right.
Like I felt like I was always predicted like really low grades. And even though it was like some weird like algorithm, as well as like what the teachers were predicting, but I felt like I had a lot of, I felt like I needed to prove myself to them and prove that I'm capable of doing better or I'm better than what they think I am.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you think your creativity and, you know, your imagination, was that something that was embraced by your parents, or were they, you know, I guess in some ways similar to your teachers in that it was maybe a bit discouraged?
I think they really like encouraged it. Yeah, definitely. My dad was like really encouraging of it. I think because he was always like really creative himself, like in terms of he was really good at art when he was at school, and like with his joinery, like becoming an architect as well. And I think he kind of really encouraged me to like lean into all of that. And even with my mum, like there was never a moment where like she or my dad ever said to me like, oh, you need to do something more academic or go down a more conventional path. I always felt like I was always encouraged to do what I enjoyed.
Right.
I think. Never really I don't think they ever put pressure on me either to like to work really hard or to get good grades either. I think I wanted to get good grades and I wanted to work hard, but I think that came from myself, like in terms of wanting to prove that I'm capable of better than how I'm being perceived by school.
So when you were growing up, and like it seems like you, you know, you had, you know, strong ambitions at the very least to prove your teachers wrong.
Yeah.
What was it that you wanted to do at that age? Did you have any career aspirations, what the future might look like?
It's interesting. Like, I don't know. I think I did realize I wanted to do something creative quite early on. I'm trying to think like when I was at primary school, I don't think I had like a clear, I definitely went down that path, which all kids go down, where you're like, oh, maybe I could be a fireman or a policeman or all those things. I went going down that random path. But when I hit secondary school, I think I felt like I realized I was more, I was enjoying like drama and acting. And actually, when even when I was in primary school, I started going to like this drama club that was on like every Sunday, and it would be in this like local like village hall, and there'd be like these kids who would, we'd kind of be like learning to act and like putting on a play. And yeah, I really enjoyed that, and enjoyed that process of like acting, and like and yeah, so that was like one of the first moments where I was like, oh, there's something here that's quite fun. And then yeah, while I was at secondary school, I was interested in films and filmmaking, and then there was like this local film club called Film Oxford, and they were a local charity where they teach people how to make films, and they've got equipment. And I remember just emailing them and being like, I want to learn how to make films and I want to do things. And they were like, most of our courses are for people who are over 18. But we do this festival called Summer Screen, where it's for like young people, and it's about them learning to make films. And then so I started getting involved with that, and just realised I really enjoyed that.
And in getting involved in, you know, acting, drama, is that where most of your friends came from? Mm. And to what extent, I mean, you know, you're in Littlemore, you described that, you know, it was very white working class.
Mm.
Did you have, you know, friendships and connections to people who were from Cowley or Iffley, who you might not have necessarily encountered at school?
I don't think I had friends outside of school, or people from Cowley or anything. I didn't really have any Muslim friends growing up, or South Asian friends. I think in terms of friendships generally, I don't think I had many friends like growing up. In terms of at primary school, I think I struggled to make friendships, and I was more of like a lone wolf, I guess, just on my own, sort of like doing my own thing. But I think that meant that I was more imaginative, and like was able to lean into my imagination more. And then at secondary school, I did have a few friends, and I felt like my time there, I was like gradually, yeah, like building like a bit of a friendship circle. But they were definitely sort of like white working class friends, and yeah.
And I guess maybe exploring a bit more your experiences of being Muslim in the city you're in Littlemore.
Yeah.
Where would you or your family go to worship? Would you travel into Oxford to go to the mosque, or was there a place of worship in Littlemore?
So the Mansell Way Mosque is where that we've always gone. But there was originally a mosque in Bath Street, and that was the original version of that mosque. So we used to go to that mosque. And then once that changed and went to Mansell Way, we went there. So that's where we would go for worship. And it's really interesting with that mosque, like seeing it evolve over time, because it's like seeing it start from nothing, and then like how long it's taken to evolve, and like, yeah, so many years, across so many years. And it feels like definitely like a community project, I think.
And is that similar to, you know, things like accessing halal meat, for example? Would you have to come into Oxford to be able to do stuff like that?
In Littlemore there wouldn't be like any sort of halal meat. So like, yeah, Cowley Road and like sort of around that sort of area, like Morglan Road, like the halal butchers, yeah, around there.
You know, it's really interesting because I've been researching the history of the mosque, and you know, the community crowd, yeah, I guess fundraising efforts to build the mosque. You might not have any memories of this, but do you? You mentioned that, you know, the mosque has changed a lot over the time. It feels like community. Can you maybe comment a bit more on that, like how it's evolved over time, and how you, as you know, a young person living in Oxford, your relationship to a place like that?
Yeah, totally. No, I think so. I feel like the trying to think that with the Bath Street mosque, I don't remember it that well, but I remember it being quite small, like completely different to the mosque that we're in now. And then with this mosque, I remember like various different stages. I always remember it feeling like a build, like it was always under construction, and there was always like building work going on. And so I remember like the downstairs area. I think it was only the downstairs part that was accessible. And then eventually you got the upstairs part. And then like the most recent addition is probably like the dome of it and like the chandeliers. And like, it just feels like it's kind of almost like completed now. So yeah, it feels like there's like bit by bit, like you feel like things have changed. But I do remember like, I've got memories of like, you know, during the Friday, like they would be like, they would say things like, they would be like, oh, we're raising money for this, we're raising money for that, like for the carpets, to get new carpets, or for the work on the roof, or different things like that. So it would be like, there would be different stages and intentions behind it. And yeah, then people would donate money, like the bucket would go around. Mm.
Yeah, it's a really ambitious project.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
And it's yeah, I mean, it's really valuable to hear that this wasn't, that this had to happen like, quite slowly and incrementally.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who we've spoken to in the past take a lot of pride in the fact that, you know, money wasn't taken from the council, that
yeah.
It was all self-funded. I mean, how do you feel about that? Like, and do you feel a sense of pride being from the city, knowing that, you know, people that you know you're connected to, you know, created this from nothing,
yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, it does feel like quite incredible. Like, I've never really thought about it. Like, I've never looked at it from a distance and like been like, oh, like looking at it as like this whole community project. But I definitely feel like it is one, and it is really impressive that they've been able to do it without any like institutional support. And also the mosque is like, when I've taken friends who are not from the city to the mosque, and everyone is very impressed by it, and they're like, wow, it's such an incredible mosque. And like, I think that in itself, like, they put so much, they've invested so much into it to make it look really great as well. I think like there's, so there is like a lot of pride in it. And I also feel like with the it feels like there's a few different mosques, like, you know, with the Stanley Road one as well. But I definitely get the impression that, you know, there's no rivalry or anything. Like, it feels like, you know, sometimes when there's something going on, like, all the mosques seem to, like, release, like, a joint statement together and, like, have, like, a like almost, like, a collective stand on things, which is really nice. So, yeah, it seems like there is a good community. There's a like, good camaraderie between the different institutions.
So I guess maybe jumping to your experiences, you spoke of your dad's experiences of, you know, education, higher education in particular. You know, it's for a lot of people from the outside looking at Oxford, the university seems to be really central in
yeah.
their impressions of Oxford. What is your relationship with the university or the centre of the city more generally? Because in speaking to
yeah.
people, it seems like, you know, where tourists or, you know, people outside of Oxford would focus on this area, for a lot of Muslims or, you know, migrant families, it is places like Cowley and Iffley
yeah.
that are central to their experiences.
Hmm.
So what is your relationship to the city in that sense?
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting because I think, like, growing up here, like, I feel like I would very rarely come into the city centre, and like it almost felt like the university felt quite invisible to me. Like, it felt like it was here, but it wasn't. I was never really aware of it in terms of like what it was doing. And even now, it feels like, the way I see it is, it's like a parallel universe. Like, it's almost like living in Oxford as a resident and the university feels like two different things which are coexisting together, but they feel like two different strands. And like, I feel very sort of disconnected from the university part. Like, I feel like even though all these buildings are like dotted around, like, I know very little about their history, and I know very little about, I don't know what they look like in the inside and what goes on in them. So, and even when I take friends round to show them around Oxford, you know, they're always intrigued by like the buildings and the architecture, and like, to me it's almost like weird, like looking at it from that perspective, because these buildings have always existed here, but I've never, for some reason I don't feel like I'm a part of that. I feel like, I don't know, I do feel like, it feels like two different communities, I think, like the student community and the town community, and even though like you can feel like there is a big student presence in Oxford, it just feels like they coexist, but they're not connected. Right. And it, to me, it almost feels like a different city. And I applied to Oxford to do English, and I remember when I stayed at Brasenose College for like the interview for like a couple of days, and I remember feeling like I had gone to a different city, even though it was like, you know, 20 minutes from my house, or like 30 minutes from my house, and that felt like a very surreal experience, I think. Like seeing it from a different perspective, and like, wow, I don't think I belong in this place.
Did you ever meet students, like, you know, there's such a massive student population here.
Yeah.
And did you ever meet Muslim students, for example? I don't know if they were ever used in the mosque, and, you know, what did that interaction look like?
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, I think I have met Muslim students. I think it is interesting, because it does feel like, you just get the sense like their experience is very different to yours, in the sense that like they're not from this city. But I think, but at the same time, like, because they're Muslim and from the diaspora, you still connect over the fact that you, I think it would be very different to say, for example, meeting like someone who's privately educated and like white middle class, for example. That I think, you know, I think there is still like a common ground in that. And you understand like how, I don't know, that Oxford is still, it's like a university that a lot of people have gone to, but you also hear stories of like how, it's almost like a university that a lot of people aspire for, like it's an ambition for a lot of people, but also like how tough it can be as well, and like how maybe people don't feel like they belong here as well.
Yeah, because, you know, for the project we've been doing some research on, you know, Muslim students and scholars who came here, and I guess for a lot of people where their time here is so brief, like for students, they're here for 3 years, whereas for you and for people who've grown up in Oxford, like, you've been here for generations, right? So it's really interesting to hear that there are parts of the city that just don't feel like yours, despite the fact that you've got roots here and you've been here for so long. And there are people who are here for 3 or 4 years and they feel like this is the only part of the city that they really ever encounter or see.
Totally. I think it's also like because these buildings don't feel accessible to the community. And I think, like, in terms of community spaces, like, these buildings or grounds, or, like, they will never be community spaces. They will always be part of the university. And, like, there's 2 days in the year, the Open Oxford, where, like, the community can go into the buildings and stuff. But to me, that seems just like a bit of a gimmick. And it's, like, it just seems like not enough. Like, I think, I don't know, like, maybe it's a question of how much the university sees itself as wanting to serve the community that's in its city or not. But to me it just seems like too random, like very sort of distant.
So your experiences of higher education, you just mentioned that you applied to Oxford. Could you detail that a bit further?
Mm.
What were your ambitions when you were leaving college? What did you want to do?
Yeah, so I think growing up, I definitely wanted to like get into filmmaking, and that was my intention. And then weirdly, like there was a moment where I went to sixth form at St. Greg's, and there was a moment where like I was invited to go to an open day at Oxford by one of the teachers, and I was doing English for A level at the time as well. And I think just that gesture in itself was like really like surprising to me, because I was like, I would never in a million years like contemplate the idea of going to Oxford or like studying at Oxford. And I didn't see myself in that way. I didn't see myself as like academically, like, even though I was trying hard and like really focused, I didn't see myself in that academic space. But I think that really like surprised me, and I was like, when I went to the open day, I was like, oh, maybe that I could see myself here, and it does seem cool to like do that. And suddenly that's what I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to do English at uni and apply to Oxford, and yeah, just, I think I also wanted to like, and even like the idea of like doing English at uni was something I never thought I would do, especially because I struggled with reading when I was quite young, and I didn't read many books growing up, and I didn't feel like that was something that I would be very good at. But I noticed like during my A-levels that was something I was enjoying more of, and I thought maybe it might help my screenwriting or my filmmaking in terms of like, understanding stories and like being able to analyse stories and stuff. So that's what I decided to do. But I felt like there was also like an opportunity to like maybe do like a filmmaking course instead, and I was like, oh, maybe I could have done that. There was a scholarship for, there was a film school, I'm not sure if it's a film school, but there's this thing called SAE Oxford, and they're like a film build, like they teach film and sound audio engineering in a few different locations. And there's actually one in Littlemore that had opened opposite like the Littlemore Mental Health Hospital. And they had like a scholarship for like to study filmmaking there, but it was still quite new, and like I wasn't sure if that was a good idea or not. But I decided, no, I'm gonna do English instead. But I definitely felt like there was a fork in the road in terms of like, do I go down more like filmmaking or down more something academic? But yeah, but I, in the end, I went to UCL to do English.
And what was that like, moving to London?
Yeah, so I didn't actually move to London.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
you're commuting.
I commuted, yeah, which was actually, it was quite tiring and exhausting, but yeah, it was, yeah, it was pretty crazy. Like, I think it was weird because growing up in like quite a white working class community, it felt like, to me, the UCL and doing English there felt like I was in a white middle class community and more of like a private, the educated white middle class community, and even so, I didn't feel like I belonged there either.
Right.
But it felt like a very extreme difference to where I came from. And yeah, I think, yeah, you do. I felt a bit of imposter syndrome in terms of, well, like everyone, I don't feel like I'm as sort of qualified for this, like in terms of like studying English and doing well at it, but. But no, I did enjoy it as well. Yeah.
And what was the process of finding a community there? You know, I guess maybe commuting might have made finding connections a bit difficult, but yeah, like what was that like? And did you find community with other, you know, racialized minority students or Muslim students, for example? What was that like?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I did feel like I struggled to find a community there, I think, and, like, struggled to, like, make friendships and be part of, like, a social circle. I think because I was commuting, it felt like so much of my focus ended up just being on, like, doing my degree and, like, focusing on the work and not really being part of, like, the social part of being at uni, which in some ways I do kind of regret a little bit in terms of, like, I think looking back retrospectively, I'm like, I feel like the social part of going to uni is such a huge part of it. But I was kind of so focused on like the work and getting it done. And yeah, I think, so yeah, I don't think I've, there were a few friends that I made, but I didn't feel, but I didn't, like even with the Muslim community, like I went to like the ISOC of society there, but even there I was like, I'm not sure if I feel connected to the to this community or not. And yeah, maybe things would be different now, but I felt like, yeah, I don't know, if maybe at the time I was quite sort of I was quite introverted and quite sort of shy and maybe socially awkward, so there was like struggle to connect. Mm-hmm. I think
And did you, I mean, like, you've talked about your experiences, you had access to clubs and societies that helped you realise your passion for film and filmmaking and writing. Was that similar at UCL? Did you join any societies that allowed you to maybe, you know, sharpen those skills a bit more?
Yeah, I think my intention was to do that, but then I think in the end I didn't really get involved much. I went to the drama society a little bit, but I was kind of quite intimidated by, it just felt like everyone, it felt like, people were just so like involved and obsessed with it, and I felt like, well, maybe I don't quite belong in this world. Like it just felt like a very extreme space. And but having said that, like, I was interested and more curious by theatre and like writing, wanting to write plays, and that's when I guess that thought kind of came to me, like, oh, maybe I could start writing a play at the time.
Right.
But I wasn't really involved much in that, in societies or anything.
So where did your pursuit of, you know, writing as a career start then? Did it start during this period?
Yeah, I think definitely like my fascination with like with theatre and like wanting to write plays, and in the back of my head I still wanted to like focus on film and screenwriting as a possibility, and then I had my eye on like this film school called NFTS, which is in Beaconsfield, and there's like a number of different disciplines that they teach, and they do like a screenwriting MA for 2 years. I wanted to do that program and learn screenwriting, but then because the deadline was in May and because my final year exams were in May, I was like, can't really focus much on building a portfolio for that. So in the end I was like, I'm going to give myself a year to like try and build my writing more and then apply the following year. And then instead I went to Warwick to do film and TV studies, a master's during that time, whilst trying to build my writing a bit more. And then I went to NFTS the following year, so I applied and then got in to the programme the following year. And that, I feel like that's where my career started. Like, that kind of gave me the, doing that course laid the foundations for that.
And, you know, I guess theatre, film, there aren't very many, you know, racialised minority or Muslim people in those industries necessarily. Yeah. Were there any, I guess, role models or people who maybe shaped this ambition that this was something you wanted to pursue?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, yeah, I don't think there were many South Asian or Muslim playwrights or anything that you, or screenwriters. It was difficult to like imagine yourself in that world. I think that's why it took me so long to sort of think about it, because I always perceived like theatre as almost like Shakespeare and like this kind of like white middle class kind of like intellectual thing rather than something anyone else can do. So it did take me a while, and I didn't really go to the theatre much as a kid, apart from like with school trips and things. But I think when I was like entering the world of theatre, I feel like over time you begin to, I think that's where I've found my community, I think, in terms of like other South Asians, but also Muslims. That it feels like, I think that's where, and even though that feels like super recent and possibly even in the last maybe 2 years, maybe it feels like that's emerging, and it feels like, I feel like even last year seemed like a really exciting year for theatre, for Muslims. Like it felt like there were so many plays that were written by Muslim playwrights and that were on theatres, and it felt like there's a growing community, I think.
Right. And do you think, does that reflect changes in the industry, or do you think that, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, what do you think is causing that, that change?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. Like, I think there is a change in the industry, like in terms of maybe there's potentially more opportunities going around, but I think it's also people watching each other do it, people being inspired by each other, and being inspired by each other, like creating things, and seeing more visibility, and like theatres being like, oh, this play might have done well, and so maybe we can support another play that does that. I also feel like more producers, like maybe, feels like there's also more like Muslim producers who are like investing in it. So it's like in like quite like an independent way, like in terms of like as a co-producer. So like if a play was going to go on a theatre, like maybe an independent Muslim producer would like try and support, come on as a co-partner and put some more money in and like try and fundraise. So it feels like there's more like people are like making things happen themselves, and that seems to be happening more, and people feel like they're emboldened to do those things. But I definitely feel like the visibility is a big thing, I think. Like even like when my play was on Brown Boy Swim, like a lot of people were saying like, oh, they felt encouraged that, oh, like we can write a play and we can like put something on and something like that. So yeah, hopefully like there's like just ripples of change, I think.
And then having, I guess, a platform and being able to creatively use your voice, what do you hope to evoke with your writing? Have you wanted to use that to maybe platform your own experiences of being, you know, Muslim or racialized minority in Britain?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think with my writing, like I've always been clear about what I want my work would consist of, and I think I've always wanted my plays and my TV scripts to represent like Muslims and South Asians, and that's almost like the baseline of like everything that I write, because I think it's important to represent that, those communities that are not represented or not even given authentic representations, and not, their stories aren't being told on our own terms, I guess. And I feel like a lot of things need to be readdressed, but I think for me it's like, it's a combination of things of like wanting to create stories that are entertaining, compelling, that, you know, take an audience on a journey, and that, you know, that feel joyous, but also like are able to explore something quite interesting and deep about what it means to be Muslim or South Asian, what it means to navigate life in the UK or anywhere else, like with that identity. And I think for me, like growing up with that circumstances of like being like a Muslim South Asian in like a white working class community, trying to find my identity, I think that's something that I've been doing through my work as well, like trying to find who I am and like trying to find my place in my community. And I think that my work is my way of exploring that,
right.
I think, like trying to get closer to that.
And in that exploration, how has your relationship with Littlemore or Oxford changed over time? Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think, so with Brown Boy Swim, when I wrote that play, because that play is so much about, it, like, Oxford is almost like a big character in it. It's about, like, Muslim boys in Oxford. So that's almost like such a big theme and subject matter. I think it's really interesting, like, writing it, because, well, like, the first thing is almost like it's about two brown boys, two Muslim boys. But that's something that I didn't, like, a lot of people say, like, was that about your experience? Like, did you have a friendship like that? And the truth is that I didn't have a friendship like that. So it's almost like a part of me wanted, it's almost like, yeah, almost like considering, like, what it would have been like to grow up with something like, with someone who shared the same identity and experience as me. And I feel like my friendships more recently feel more like that than they did when I was growing up. But I think, yeah, for me, like, wanting to, I think understanding Oxford through that prism has been really interesting. And, like, then presenting it back to Oxford, like, in terms of, like, showing it at the North Wall, and, you know, Oxford communities coming into it and watching it. And interestingly, like, the theatre-going community and audience is often white middle class. So I feel like, inevitably, like, that story and play is going to provoke them and challenge them about what it's like to grow up in this city. I think the only thing that I'm kind of, that I felt a bit sad about is, like, I wanted this play to be something where, like, this community can feel seen and represented in. And it's difficult to get that community to the theatre and to get them to engage with it. Because it, I think that's more a symptom of, like, how theatre isn't accessible for those communities. And theatre's not doing the work to bring those communities in and make them feel accepted and invited. And that's something that I'm really, like, conscious of, and, like, I want to work on and try and, like, readdress that. Like, especially because I'm working on another play at the moment, which is also going to be in Oxford. And again, I want it to, like, depict, like, a part of Oxford and a part of being Muslim and South Asian in Oxford. And I'm really keen for that community to feel like they can come and watch it and be a part of it. So I think it's interesting, like, when you create work, you want that community to feel like they're able to engage with it, I think.
What was your family's response to your writing? Like, how have they found a new way to explore their own identities through your work?
Yeah, I think so. It's, like, for me, it's always, like, daunting when I, like, present my work to them, and, like, when they watch it, because it's, like, it's so exposing and vulnerable, and it's almost like, how are they going to, like, interpret it? But I think for them, like, they, maybe it does, like, allow them to see things in a different way, and to understand how things feel. And, like, yeah, I am intrigued. Like, it's difficult to know, like, how much it changes their view of the city, or it changes. I'm intrigued by that, because, yeah, I'm not quite sure.
And what are your ambitions moving forward? I mean, in your writing more generally, but in terms of, you know, you mentioned engaging with South Asian and Muslim communities.
Mm.
What do you hope to achieve through your writing over the coming years? It'd be great to know that.
Yeah, totally. I think like, community is, like, a big thing. Like, I think in terms of, like, making a community feel like they can come to the theatre and feel like they're a part of a story, and making sure they feel engaged and a part of that and don't feel like it's accessible. I think I want to just continue to create stories that keep representing different parts of what it means to be Muslim or South Asian and the complexities of that, and keep offering new and exciting stories, and yeah, that I think keep like provoking and challenging everyone, and yeah, and also just like to, I think as I grow and change, like I think to like mirror that as well, to like, because I think that's something I'm quite intrigued in, like what I'm preoccupied with at the time. I would only be able to write that thing at that point in my life, so I'm like constantly curious of like my journey as a person and like how that is reflected in my work and the things I'm curious by and things that I want to explore. But I definitely feel like joy is important as well, like wanting to create joyous stories and not making things feel too sort of I think allowing, almost like inviting ourselves not to feel like we need to be too like, I guess, tarnished by trauma, I think, like allowing ourselves to feel joy on our own terms and like wanting our stories to kind of speak to that. But yeah, I'm really excited by the idea of like, even like other creatives, like that building, like there being more people doing it, and like more Muslim filmmakers and playwrights, and like wanting to like support that as well, and like wanting to see other people come up, and especially people where like writing isn't accessible to them, and where like they can't imagine themselves in that position for one reason or another, like allowing that to become more possible. Yeah.
And what are your thoughts about the extent to which theatre and the arts more generally can challenge people's perceptions of being Muslim and being Muslim in Britain? You know, some creatives might use this as a way to channel their own politics.
Mm.
Do you think the arts plays, you know, a significant role in shifting those perceptions, maybe?
Yeah, I think definitely. Like, I think I definitely see like the arts as being like vital in like trying to challenge people's perspectives and sort of like, yeah, impacting the way you feel about things. Because I think, yeah, like, I think we're in such a dangerous time right now in terms of politically, like kind of like the messaging that we're getting from the world and like the increasing like right wing kind of agenda that seems to be happening. And I think, like, to me it feels like art, theatre, film, TV is where we can offer something else and offer like a new narrative. I really believe it is important, but I also sometimes I don't feel like it needs to be like political with a capital P as well. I think just like representing your reality as a Muslim in itself is political, or like is giving a message, or I sometimes feel like with our writing and work, I sometimes feel like we feel a responsibility to carry a lot on our shoulders in terms of like wanting to kind of convey just how difficult it is, just like the pressures of being a Muslim, like in terms of in this world and like the barriers and obstacles. But I feel like, I think sometimes like the simplicity of creating a story about a Muslim in itself is enough, that you don't need to like overload it. Like, I think like in terms of like, for example, like Prevent is something that I've seen so many plays about Prevent now, and I'm really, I want to see Muslim writers feel like they don't need to respond to that provocation anymore. Like because it feels like we don't need to tell Muslim stories in relation to state institutions like Prevent. Like we should be able to tell our stories on our own terms, I think. And then sometimes like trying to unlearn those things is important. And I think even for me, like I struggled with like the responsibility as a Muslim artist, like representing my community, how can I represent them like fairly and not tarnish the way I'm representing my community, like not tarnish my community, like explore some important themes, ideas, and yeah, I found all of that stuff. I think it is really difficult, but when I was part of the Pillars Fellowship, which is like a program where you're with like 9 other filmmakers who are all Muslim as well, I realized during that process that everyone else is dealing with the same thing, and finding that kind of community and camaraderie with each other was like really kind of freeing and liberating, because it was like we're all dealing with something here, but we've all got each other and we're all going to do it together, and not everyone, like, you know, I'm not the only one here who has to tell every Muslim story, and I don't have to represent everything, and someone else, we're all going to do it together, sort of thing. And I do really believe that you just only have to represent your truth, I think. And that will resonate with people, that will resonate with other Muslims and other South Asians or something like that. So I think, yeah.
I guess just like a final point on this, it's fascinating. It's really encouraging to hear there's so much camaraderie amongst Muslim artists. This approach, how has that been shaped over time? Did you, at the beginning of your career, feel this impulse to, you know, I guess, react to, you know, what was in the newspapers or, you know, the violence of the state? When did you, I guess, come to this realization, it might have been slow, that you don't have to react, that you can just tell your story on your own terms?
Yeah, I think it is such a gradual process, actually. And I think there's even like one step before that, which is even like more sort of scary to think about, because it's almost like where you feel like you can only tell that a certain type of story because of who you are. And like you're, I think it's almost like you have to like wear your, you almost like are exoticizing your own culture. And that story is your invitation to the table, almost. And I think when I first started in the industry, I felt like that's the messaging that I felt like the industry was giving me, in terms of that, as a Muslim filmmaker, the only story I can tell is in relation to the way being Muslim is politicized in the world, in terms of like, yeah. And I think maybe that's more like symptomatic of like the times we were in, like in terms of like, yeah, like the late, like 2015, 16, 17, like around that sort of time. But I think now it feels like so much has happened, you know, after like Black Lives Matter and all of that, and like so many like movements have changed, and I feel like there's a growing Muslim filmmaking theatre community. I think the needle has moved, and it's almost like now we're encouraged to like, we should encourage each other to like tell stories on our own terms and not feel like we need to be responsive to other people. But I think it is still really tough, because you're still going to have to navigate the industry, and you're going to have to like communicate with people who are not part of your community, and you're going to have to try and sell them what you want, and you have to try and convince them, and you're going to face backlash from them, face knockbacks. So like, yeah, it's a tricky one, but I think that it comes to a point where you have to preserve your integrity on certain things and not feel like you can be so malleable as well. And but I guess it's a constant balance and thing that you're constantly like figuring out.
And I guess maybe a concluding question. Had this broad reflection of growing up in Oxford and, you know, moving into an industry where, you know, there is still few but a growing number of Muslim and South Asian representation, I guess. In reflecting on that journey, is there anything in the interview that you haven't mentioned that you feel is quite specific to your experiences of being a Muslim in Oxford?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's... I don't think so, no. I think that's, I feel like we've kind of covered everything. I think, yeah, it's just interesting in terms of like, because I grew up in Littlemore and like felt like I was apart. I was distant from where the Muslim community was. Like, it's difficult to imagine like what those spaces were, where because it, yeah, it's a weird one. Like, I think like looking back at it now, I kind of wish I grew up more firmly, grew up more rooted in the Muslim community, because I feel like it's taken me a long time in my life to feel like I belong in a space, and the only space that I feel like I belong in is like the Muslim creative community, like filmmakers and playwrights, and who are like doing things, and a lot of them are in London, some of them are in America through like the Pillars Fellowship that I was talking about. But in Oxford, sometimes it's tricky to imagine what, if I'd found a Muslim community earlier on in my life, what, how, who I would be and how I would be different. But I was thinking like the school that my dad went to, Oxford Boys School, which is now Oxford Spires, but that still has like a big Muslim community. And I wonder, like, if I was to go there, like, would I have made more Muslim friends quite early on? Yeah, so it's an interesting one. And I do see it in my cousins. Like, I see in my younger cousins who have gone to that school and they feel more connected to being Muslim very early on. And I also feel like something about the way they've been raised represents the times that we're in, which is different to the times that I was in, where, like, you know, after school they would do like an Urdu class, and also like, you know, like a Quran class, and like learn to like perfect their Arabic and things like that, do all these like extracurricular things which are centered on like being Muslim and being South Asian, being Pakistani, and how that is so celebrated. But during my childhood, that would not, I feel like it would have been challenging, because I feel like at that time you had to assimilate, especially in like such a white working class community that you're surrounded in. So sometimes I'm just intrigued, like my younger cousins feel like they have a different experience just based on the times that we're in and what it means to be Muslim in Oxford and in the UK. And that's how that's like celebrated more, I think, like early on in your life. But I think for me, like my appreciation of my culture is something that's crept up on me later on in my life, like as I've got older, through my writing, through the people I've met, and yeah, just me kind of learning to love my culture again. But when you're a kid, you kind of shun it away because you're trying to survive and assimilate, I think.
Yeah, it's almost you're seeing a generational change.
Yeah.
It's like where, you know, your grandparents and your dad had very specific experiences to the times that they grew up in.
Yeah.
Now you're in a position where you're sort of looking to another generation of people and comparing your experiences.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. And also, I'm noticing like there's also a trend going on, like just within my family, where like my uncle, who's got like slightly younger kids, like they decided to move to Pakistan, and he decided he wanted to raise his kids there, in Islamabad. And my cousin, who's also got kids, like also younger kids, she's also going to go to Pakistan, Islamabad, to raise her kids there as well. And I'm really intrigued by that, because it feels like it's similar to what my grandfather might have done when he took my dad and my uncle and aunt to Pakistan to raise his kids in Karachi. And I don't know if it's like wanting, I think from my understanding, their intention is they want their kids to feel immersed in their culture more. They want them to feel more immersed in like being Muslim, being Pakistani, and understanding their culture and being able to speak the language really well. But I'm really intrigued by what it feels like. That's becoming an increasing pattern, I'm noticing.
Yeah, like, that it's even possible. Like,
yeah.
It's the idea that's entertained is, you know, something you couldn't necessarily imagine a few decades ago. But yeah, it's an interesting experiment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think that concludes the interview.
Cool, amazing.
Yeah, I guess that's everything.
Cool, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, no worries at all.